7 billion humans on Earth can't all like the same drink. That's why Circle K has Polar Pop and Froster. Pick your flavors and make that 1 in 7 billion mix just right for you. Polar Pop and Froster, just 79 cents each at Circle K. Limited time only at participating locations.
Dude, I look down and I'll tell you the funny story. I was in the DreamWorks restroom. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I was there and on the corner of my eye, I see someone short. And I thought, you know, it's sometimes some of the executives have brought their kids in there. And I thought, okay. And I look over and it's Danny DeVito.
Oh, no way.
And I could not believe it because I love Danny DeVito.
Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist of billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Elevating Beyond with a two-word mission statement, change lives. And get ready, as usual, we have another phenomenal show with an incredible guest. And actually, I have to give a shout out to our man, Dave Vesio, the actor that's been on our show twice, who actually connected me with Michael Levine, and in a sense, connected me in a way with today's awesome guest that we have. And you'll find out a little surprise of how the two of them are connected. But today's guest we have is the director of the movie Odd Way Home, Rajiv Nirmalakandan. And I tried my best not to butcher that. And before I go on, and you've accomplished so many other things too that we'll continue to talk about as we share your story from current movies that you're working on and so many other things that you've done and that you are doing. But first and foremost, how are you doing today, my man?
I'm doing really good, Mark, and it's a pleasure to be talking to you this morning, and I can't wait to share my stories and answer your questions, and I really hope that what I can share could be helpful and entertaining.
Well, people get ready. You're in for some powerful stuff here, because in addition to overcoming 4 spinal surgeries... And can I just call you? You go by Raj a lot too, right?
Awesome. Yeah, Raj is good.
Awesome. We'll go by Raj for the rest of the show. Raj has been through, and he's going to share all this with you, a combination of not only going through 4 spinal surgeries, but some stuff he went through in his childhood. And he's going to talk about ways that he's dealt with it, and even through laughter and through humor, and how he's learn like the importance of keeping a positive mindset throughout adversity in life has really been a lot of like the fundamental keys of how he found his creativity and really created his own success almost through the adversity, which is what Elevating Beyond is all about. But where I really want to just start off with, Raj, is why I mentioned Dave Vesio. Is he was one of the actors in the movie that you directed, Odd Way Home. And I remember when you wrote me, we connected through Facebook, and you wrote me about this show, and I contacted him right away because I have so many people writing me about being on Elevating Beyond. And I asked him, I'm like, did you work with Raj? Is he the real deal? And Dave Vesio had nothing but great things to say about you. He's like, absolutely. He's like, Raj is an incredible guy. He would be a great guest on your show. So he didn't even hesitate to vouch for you.
Well, and, I definitely thank Dave. It was a pleasure working with him, and not only just working with him on the movie, but since then we've kept touch via Facebook, and he's definitely someone that I think is quite special.
That's awesome. Yeah, he has a powerful story himself, and he loves playing those characters. You guys have to watch the movie to see, but he plays his classic creepy character in Odd Way Home and does it perfectly. But, you know, before we go into a little bit of your childhood, I just want everyone to get a little glimpse you're working really hard some years ago on creating. You wrote the script for this independent film, but all of a sudden, you're starting to get, it's starting to attract like a lot of these pretty high level actors from what I've seen. Like, can you just share that with everyone, a little bit of that experience from what you were expecting to, and name some of the actors that started popping up on the roster?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'll tell you quickly about how I came up with the story. It's about a woman who is dealing with, you know, domestic abuse and drug abuse, alcoholism, and she's fleeing her life, and she's really kind of at the lowest point of her life, and she meets a young man with autism, and they go on this life reaffirming journey. And although he has autism, he's not the one that needs saving. It turns out that he has an amazing influence on her life and gives her a whole new awakening, so she could spread her wings and be healed. And I came up with this story when I was asked to do a documentary many years ago on children with autism. And I went into it completely, you know, blind about it. I didn't really know enough about it. But when I met these children and met these families, it really touched my heart. And something about them just wouldn't leave my mind. So I came up with a story. And then I wanted to write the script. So I wrote it with a friend of mine, Jason Ronstadt, at the time when I was teaching here at NMSU, and wrote this script. And initially, we were just going to do it. We're like, you know what? It's a nice little script. Let's do it for like $50,000. Let's do it small. And then we started sending the script out to a few people, some producers and other people in the industry, and it was getting an amazing response. And they said, you know, Raj, there's more potential here than just a small little film. So I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. I'm really grateful that it's really striking a chord. So I sent it a few more people, same reactions. I thought, okay, let's keep going then. So then we got it to a casting director in LA, and the casting director loved it, and she sent out the script in LA. And I was astonished at the kind of people and the amount of interest we were getting based on the script. So we were getting all kinds of different people reading and coming in to the casting office and reading from the script. And here I am back in New Mexico, and I'm watching these scenes and these moments and these words that we've written come alive through these great actors. And so finally we narrowed down all these actors, and we came up with what I feel like are like this dream team of five top actors.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I was really fortunate to be able to work with them and to have their genuine interest in the project. So I would say that the lead of the film is Rumor Willis. And she, as you probably know, is Bruce Willis and Demi Moore's daughter. She's been in.
You know what's funny? Sorry to interrupt you real quick, but it was when I had Dave Vesio on my show the first time that I learned about your movie, The Odd Way Home, actually, which I'm looking at right now on Netflix and on iTunes. And I downloaded it after he was on it because I was intrigued. In the field that I'm in, you know, my company, we work with individuals with special needs. So I was really intrigued, and I love that movie. And I actually didn't know that was Bruce Willis and Demi Moore's daughter. He told me that, and I was like, wow, that, cause she was phenomenal. But
yeah,
go ahead.
You know, everywhere I screened the film at festivals across the country, people were blown away by her performance. She gives such a gritty, hard, you know, just such a textured performance. And people were like, oh my God, we had no idea that Rumor was so amazing. And she really was. And she's been in movies like House Bunny and Hostage and Striptease. And she also was the winner of the Dancing with the Stars a couple of years ago. She took the top prize. And since then, she's done some Broadway stuff. And so she's really, you know, she's really out there doing all kinds of singing and acting, and did a phenomenal job in our film.
She really did that. I had no idea, and not that being the daughter of them doesn't make her any less special or anything, but I just thought was like, wow, this person they found is just incredible. And I loved her. She was just so raw and real and just like, I don't know what you had in your head when you wrote that character, But like I, from what I saw from the film, like she nails it. She did a phenomenal job.
Yeah. I mean, the character was kind of drawn from my experiences in living in Los Angeles. I lived in LA for about 5 years and I met so many people, you know, that come out there chasing a dream, and some take wrong steps and end up down the wrong path. And it was kind of a culmination of different people that I had met while I was there, and some research we did on abuse and alcoholism and whatnot. And when she came in to read, actually, for the part, the casting director was really surprised, because she said that, you know, Rumor normally never comes in to read, and that she really liked the script. And
that's cool.
You know, she was a trooper during the whole production. I mean, she, you know, we were out in New Mexico. It was 110 degrees in the summer when we shot this film. And, you know, she pushed through. She was out there with the rest of the crew and you know, made it happen. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we were ready. And then we had some of the other actors. We had Chris Marquette, which gave he gave a phenomenal performance as Duncan, the young man with autism.
Yes.
And he's been in films such as Fanboys, The Girl Next Door. And he's definitely, you know, when you see his face, you'll recognize him from other films that most people have seen.
Yeah, he's been nominated for some, actually he's won some awards too, right?
Yes, he has, yeah. He's a natural. I mean, he became the character. I mean, it's as a filmmaker and as a writer, it's truly a gift when you write a character on the page and then you see that character come to life right in front of your eyes.
Wow.
Just the way you imagined it. And that is, it's magical. And I saw that scene after scene with Chris. And so it was a pleasure. And they had great chemistry as well, Rumor and Chris. I mean, what makes the film work is their relationship, you know, in the film, to see this hard, battered, angry, you know, character from Los Angeles meeting this young, innocent man with autism from a small town in New Mexico. And you take these two people from opposite ends of the world and you put them together, and now they're on this road trip together.
Yeah.
And you see how they affect each other, and by the end they form this amazing friendship that is, you know, that has no barriers. And to see that change in them and to go on that journey with them is I think what really touches audiences. You know, when I screen this film, people, you know, people cry, people laugh, and really become engaged in the journey that these two people take.
That's right. That's right. I know. Well, that's exactly what I felt when I watched it. It was, it just, I can't say enough about it. It was incredibly well done. Everyone listening to this, if you didn't get it before when Dave Vesio was on, or if you did, get it again, watch it again. It's incredibly well done. And also, something else I want to ask you, and we'll get into this a little more too, but how did you, I'm sure you worked for a while to be able to just start getting your screenplay out there and mm-hmm. having it reach all these people. Had you made a lot of connections throughout the years? Were you able to start getting it out kind of to the right
people?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I lived in LA for 5 years. I went to film school out there, and I was a reader and an intern, and I helped assist some of the studios such as DreamWorks and Universal. And then, you know, when I came out to New Mexico, I grew up in New Mexico, and I came back after being in LA and making my previous film. You know, New Mexico has a very strong culture of filmmaking. There's many of the huge films are made here, such as Avengers, Indiana Jones, and Terminator.
Nice.
So there's a lot of people here. And so having grown up in this state, I've just made a lot of connections and people that were engaged in filmmaking. And I'm also a faculty at a film school called the Creative Media Institute, which is where I've been teaching for the last 11 years. So we have such great students, you know, dedicated, really talented students that I was able to bring on to work as crew. And then I think what really got the ball rolling was I met a producer in Albuquerque, and he's British, and we just clicked immediately. He's become one of my best friends.
That's awesome.
And he's the one that really kind of gave us the spark to get it going. And once he came on board, and we started working together, and then we sent the script out to the casting director in LA. Once we got it to the casting director, that's when it became real, because once we had all these actors, you know, coming in to read and showing interest and sending reels, then we thought, okay, you know, it's one thing to send a script to someone and they say, hey, we like it. But when you send it to a casting director and all these actors want to be in the film, and they're not doing this for money, because this is not a big budget film. This is still an independent film.
And, so and you're getting some big actors, too, that are reading for it.
And fortunately, they work for scale, and because they just love the project and they wanted to be in it. So once that happened, then, you know, when, you know, like any project, once you have actors attached, it becomes real. Then it's easy to go out and raise the rest of the financing and bring the other pieces together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you say that lightly, but I know you had to I know for sure you had to work your butt off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I started, I mean, I basically, you know, I always tell people that giving making a film is the closest that a man could come to giving birth, because I started this from the initial concept to all the way to bringing people together and raising the financing, which took about 3 years, I think, and then getting the actors, producing it, and with my friend Peter Touche, the producer from England, film, editing the film, doing festivals, doing promotions, doing marketing. Yeah, so it's a long process.
Yeah, well, it's like being an artist and an entrepreneur, which really they go hand in hand. So I mean, you had to start something from scratch and birth it and make sure that it continued through and work your butt off and not give up
definitely.
Along the way, go through all the obstacles.
Yeah.
And speaking of obstacles, like, this is a perfect time to kind of segue, or how you'd write in a screenplay if it would be a flashback or whatever. But, you know, let's take everyone back before you were in UCLA and even in film school. And you mentioned to me, as we talked a few times on the phone and stuff, that you came here not only as an immigrant that couldn't speak the language and stuff, so you had that, like, kind of going against you for challenges, but also you had a disability as well. So can you kind of describe that to all of our listeners and just take them through that part of the journey?
So I was born in Sri Lanka, which is a small island on the other side of the planet, and you know, we were suddenly transplanted because of a civil war, and my family and I had to quickly drop everything and leave. So here we are in a brand new country, and you know, it's a culture shock in every way. You know, I did not really know the culture. I did not speak the language. I was also, just from my premature birth, I was very I would say not plagued, but definitely there were some curveballs health-wise ever since I was a child. I was really small for my age, so I looked a lot younger. So here I am, you know, starting school in a whole new country. I look completely different. I'm brown. I'm short. I'm cannot speak the language quite well. And so all of a sudden I'm an immigrant, but I'm also dealing with these other issues and having to somehow make sense of it all. And there was no rule book. There was no, you know, no guidance. I just was kind of thrown into the deep end, and I had to kind of fend for myself and figure things out. And I remember initially it was really isolating, because I didn't even know to ask the kind of questions I should have asked. All I knew was I was so different. I didn't fit in. So I wasn't really included with the other kids. I mean, A, I looked different, but also because of my disability, there was many things I couldn't do. Like, most of the kids bond on the playground or playing sports or running around or, you know, riding bicycles down the streets. A lot of that stuff I couldn't do. So all of a sudden, I was not able to participate in these kinds of activities that create the friendships growing up.
So Raj, just real quick, you were able to walk and stuff, but you didn't have like full functioning where you couldn't like run around and climb.
Exactly.
You could walk like with assistance pretty much.
Yeah.
Right?
I was able to walk, but I couldn't really run.
Okay.
And I couldn't like jump and do like physically, you know, climb up on monkey bars and jump off or, you know, jump off a ledge, things like that. I couldn't do. I was barely able to get by. And, you know, as you know, that kids can be really tough.
That's right.
And bullying is a very big part of, unfortunately, a big part of childhood. And I went through it myself. I mean, it was something that I had to deal with on a daily basis because the kids will immediately see when they see someone who's different and is different from them and cannot do the things they can do, that's like a target. Mm. And so I had to deal with that. And, you know, as a child, you don't understand that. You don't understand, wait, why is this person saying this and doing this? I mean, clearly this is not right, but at that age, we don't quite understand it. And even now, I mean, it's a problem, as you know, like always. And one of the things that, you know, I hope to do through when I speak to kids or through, you know, my films or anything I could do is to show that, you know, just because one is different, does that mean that person is lesser or someone that you should be afraid of? I mean,
absolutely.
We're seeing it in our culture now. I mean, not even in kids, not about bullying, but it's in a way it's adult bullying when we look at a different race or a different culture or a different religion and we marginalize them and we push them aside and we're afraid of them. And so,
yeah. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like what we'll talk about in a minute is how you even use laughter and creativity to bridge those gaps. In a lot of ways, it shows way it connects us to see, wow, we share a lot of these similar things through humor and stuff, instead of having to feel like everyone's so different and you have to walk on eggshells with all these.
Yes.
That's not the way it is. At the core, we may speak different languages, we have different cultures, but at the core, a lot of us as human beings have the same things.
Yeah.
And we laugh and we like to have friendships and you know, we like to do things that are meaningful. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I mean, that's totally correct what you just said. I mean, one of my first lessons was when I was a child, maybe third grade, I'm not sure. But, you know, I was really, like I said, isolated and different. And I had no way of connecting with these kids. And I remember one day I drew a picture. And I was just drawing for my own sake because I always drew and it just came naturally. And all of a sudden the kids saw this drawing and they were like, oh my God, how did you draw this? You know, how did you learn how to do this? How did you learn how to blah, blah, blah? And I didn't learn how to do it. I just could do it. It's just a talent I had. And immediately that was like the door, the window that opened out to the outside world, because I was no longer cloistered in my own bubble. Because now I was able to communicate with these kids using my artwork, using my creativity. So all of a sudden I started making friends because they would ask me to draw things for them. They'd say, oh, can you draw this for me? Can you draw this for me? Or
That's
how
cool.
do you draw this? And all of a sudden, wow, there's communication happening, right? You know, I couldn't run down the field or jump off a ledge or, you know, do something like that, but I could draw them a picture. That was something they couldn't do. So now they're seeing me do something that they couldn't do that they respect. So, and all of a sudden there's this mutual understanding of, you know, there's two things I feel like that connect all people, no matter what, where, culture, anything, is art and humor.
That's right.
If you show someone a beautiful drawing or beautiful artwork or beautiful sculpture, no matter where you are, you can appreciate it.
That's true. There's,
you don't need language. You don't need words. You just need that imagery, and I think anyone could appreciate it. Same thing with humor, and that's something that, you know, I love making people laugh. I feel like no matter who we meet, that's a gift. I think when you make someone laugh, it's a gift that I could give to someone. And, you know, whether it's in the classroom or with my friends or when I'm giving a talk or at a film festival, you know, I just love that. And then same thing in the movie, you know, we have some great moments of humor. And in anything I write, I love to write humor. I love comedy. And I remember when we screened the film, you know, we screened it in such different cultural areas. You know, and we screened in LA, we screened in a conservative, you know, part of Michigan, Oklahoma, Nebraska, New Jersey, hardcore, El Paso, you know, all these different cities.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's moments of comedy in the film where everyone laughs at the same points in the film. And that's when I thought, you know, these people are so different. They come from such different cultures and parts of the country, yet they are laughing at the same thing. And I think if you take five people from five completely different parts of the world and put them in a room and you show them something funny and they all laugh at it, all of a sudden there's some sort of a universal connection between these two people because they are laughing at this one thing. And I think if we can just get the whole world in a big giant room and show them something funny and they all laugh together, all of a sudden, oh, wow, you're not so different. You're laughing, I'm laughing, this is funny.
That's right, that's right. It gets everyone connecting. And I mean, if you think about it too, like a lot of the best, it's when people are real and genuine with speaking, like, and sharing your stories, it's sharing the real, the drama. But also, like, I know when I'm speaking and sharing my story, sometimes when the drama gets so, like, intense to where I'm almost tearing up telling my story, like, there's a way I'll start using humor just to almost, like, make the drama more relatable.
Exactly.
And it's not like you're making fun of it, but in a way you are. It's like you're saying it's okay, we can laugh about it together. Because I moved on, like when I, after I was in jail and had my face all smashed in and stuff, like at the time it was horrible, but I'll make jokes about it now, talking about it, and people will laugh, but they're not like making fun of me, you know, we're all laughing together. And it's an important thing, I think, that it shows that you can even bring like that positivity through adversity,
yeah,
which you have been through. And everyone listening to this, you're going to like... We're going to give all your information, Raj, on the show notes where everyone can follow you. But I mean, you've already done so much, but you're just getting started. We'll talk about like your future screenplay, if you're allowed to, that you're working on, and also future like speaking events that you're working on, and so many other things. Like we could be on for 10 hours and not even begin to share just a portion of your story. You know, we're trying to give them like a highlight reel. You've been through four spinal surgeries. One of them was right around the time when you had applied for UCLA, right? And you almost didn't get accepted as a result of that?
Well, no, actually, so my first spinal surgery is right after senior year in high school. And I had to apply for UCLA. I wanted to get to UCLA because I wanted to go to the film school there. And UCLA had one of the top three film schools in the country. And so I had the surgery, and I was actually staying in the East Coast with my aunt, and the deadline was coming up, so I couldn't just wait till I got better. I had to do it. And you know, people are like, "Are you sure you're going through this recovery?" And I said, "You know what? Sure, I'm going through this recovery, but that is not going to prevent me from striving towards my goals." So I wrote this application, and I remember I had to do it in 5-minute spurts. Because I'd write for 5 minutes, my back would get so tense, my neck would get tense, then I'd have to lie down for a little bit. I'd get up again, do it again 5 minutes at a time, 5 minutes at a time. And I remember I had to even do I guess not the SAT, but there's another version of it. And I had to do it after the surgery, and it was at a school in New Jersey. And I remember doing this test, and it was, you know, 2-hour test, 3-hour test. And at the end of it, I was like, all the kids turned in their tests and they left the room and the proctor was there and I literally couldn't move. Like I couldn't get up out of the chair because my body was just completely, you know, frozen and stiff with pain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but see, now I laugh about it because I could see this scene in a movie where this guy's, you know, can't even leave the classroom because he's stuck in his desk. And anyway, so I applied and I got in and it was great. And every people were saying, you know, I'm from a small town and people were saying, you know, are you sure you want to go to Los Angeles? It's the second largest city in the country. It's like you just had this huge surgery. And I was like, you know what, let's go. I can't wait to book my flight, pack my bags, and go. So
I love it.
So I went and, you know, with this big scar on my neck. And interestingly, the second, 2 years later, I had to apply to the film school itself. And I had my second surgery around the same time. So it seems like I have a knack for planning surgeries around application times. So I applied to the film school and, you know, there was nothing else I wanted to do. And people were like, don't you want a plan B? And I said, no, if you have a plan B, then you think plan A is not going to work.
That's right.
So I didn't have a plan B and I applied. And it was very interesting because when I got the letter, I was actually in the hospital room. So the letter was addressed to my hospital room. So I still have that letter somewhere where it says neurosurgical ward, blah, 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 UCLA Medical Center. That's where I got the letter when I was in the hospital, and I got into the film school, and immediately I was like, all right, it's time to recover because I got to get to film school in the fall.
Wow. Talk about mindset. I mean, because there are so many people that make all the excuses in the world why they can't get into whatever their film school is for them, you know, whether it's college or starting their company or writing their book or maybe applying for film school, and reasons why they couldn't do good on all this victim crap. And it's like, All right, well, you were for the first round, like you could do it in 5 minute increments. And then you physically couldn't even get up afterwards because of the pain.
Yeah.
But it didn't stop you. And then you went out there to LA. Like a lot of people would stay in their comfort zone, their little town.
Well, one of the things I want to, you know, I'm reading your book right now and it's really been very engaging and I'm loving it so far. But one of the things you say in your book is the whole thing about the safety blanket. People have a safety blanket that they carry around, and once they get comfortable, they want to stay in that comfort zone because it's easy. It's not scary. And like you say in your book, you got to get rid of that, you know, comfort zone to really move forward. Otherwise, you're just in the same place.
Yeah. I talk about in Charlie Brown, he always carried that. Linus always carried his little blanket around with him. And you did exactly. In my book, I say sometimes the best thing to do is just to burn that blanket. And an example of that is, like you said, no plan B. Or when you got and packed your bags and you went to LA, it was like, there's no turning back. Now I'm going.
I remember I got to LA and I went with my dad, and you know, we got to the apartment and we drove around a little bit, and then it was time for my dad to leave. And I remember standing on the street and I gave him a hug and he drove off. And I remember standing there on that street and I saw his car disappear into the horizon. And I just stood there silently and I thought, what in the world am I doing here?
It's, you know, that's another, the next future movie is going to be on your life story. That's another scene right there. So many people can relate to that, because anytime you make a big change, it is scary. Even when you burn that blanket, it doesn't mean like, oh, I'm immediately out of my comfort zone. Now everything's comfortable. No, really, it's
not at all.
You got to go through a transition of being scared as hell. But also, exactly. You have to choose to not like run back and try to like repair that blanket and go back under it. It takes time. And then all of a sudden, what was uncomfortable starts to become, in a sense, your new normal, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
And so you persevered through that. You got into film school, obviously. And, you know, helping flash forward even more, of course, like you wrote, you directed The Odd Way Home. You've done so many other things. But then you recently had, and I want to share this part of your story, because you had your fourth spinal surgery not too far away from where I am in Columbus, I believe in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And here's where I want you to give some great, like, takeaways to everyone listening. A lot of people listening to this show, you know, they're going through their own battles, whether it's depression, or maybe they're battling with bankruptcy, or they're starting their own company and they're getting turned down again and again and again, or adversity in their marriage, or maybe it is in their health, like what you were facing. And something that you did, like, I'll never forget the way you described that to me. You went through your fourth spinal surgery, and you said you were actually making the nurses laugh.
Well, so I had my fourth spinal surgery, and by this time I'm a veteran, right? I'm like, okay, let's do this. I've been through this. But
you're a pro.
But, you know, I'm a pro, but in no way does it make it any easier. So this one was pretty intense. It was a 15-hour surgery. I lost 4 or 5 liters of blood. I got some screws and rods in my vertebrae. And I always say that I have many, many men's hands inside my back because and a lot of man-made parts in my back. So anyway, so I was in the hospital for a month. So it was a long time. It, you know, really cut you off from the world. And I remember the first week was just devastatingly tough. I mean, it's almost impossible to describe the level of pain. But, you know, one way is to drown in the sorrow and feel like you want everyone to say, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. But, you know, I thought, okay, I'm going through this, but why make it worse? So I was always making jokes and making the nurses laugh. And anyone who came into the room, I would say something funny or just make a funny observation. And I remember one of the nurses said, Raj, how could you be so lighthearted? And I said, well, I mean, yeah, this is a tough situation, and I can barely move my head, and I'm eating horrible food. But you know, if I can make someone else laugh, it's a gift that I could give to them, and it makes me feel better. It makes them feel better, and I think it also then motivates me to be more positive because it's so easy to, no matter what. When you have a problem, and it's a really big problem in your life, it's easy for it to infect other parts of your life when you start thinking, oh, I can't do this, I can't do this, and this means that, and all these things. And I feel like having a comedic aspect of life, sometimes when things get so bad, you just got to laugh. It's like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? This happens? Like, I'm actually going through this? Like, you know, it's just like you have to look at it comedically. You have to, you know, you don't have to laugh all the time. You don't have to be, you don't have to do a stand-up act every time someone comes in. But even a little moment of humor suddenly creates this moment of levity in your life and the person that you're communicating with. And that changes that relationship. And all of a sudden, they're being more generous to me because I was being funny. I'm more connected to them. And it's not like the nurse is here just doing their job. All of a sudden, I've created this relationship through this moment of humor.
Yeah, it's like you change your mindset and the circumstances will follow. Or a perfect example of creating your own environment, because I know to this day there's nurses that still share the story of you, whether they're giving it an example to their kids or whoever's going through a hard time. They're like, you think this is hard? We had Raj after his fourth spinal surgery, and I was coming in depressed, and he was the one that was making me laugh and making me like happier about life. And it was, and they're like, it should have been the other way around. So if Raj is doing that, like, what's our excuse? That's what it comes down to also.
And you know, and I'm not saying that I'm like Mr., you know, completely positive. I mean, obviously there's moments that I struggle through. There's moments
of
when,
course,
you know, there was about a 10-day period during that time where I had this excruciating headache and just couldn't get rid of it. And they tried every type of medicine, every type of methodology to try to make it better, and it would not go. It was a continuous headache for 10 days, like from morning to night. I mean, I would wake up with the headache and go to bed with the headache. And I still remember, though, I have a photograph where we tried everything, ice bags, I had a headband, and I have a photo with two nurses. You know, I became friends with all the nurses, and I have a photo with them, and I have a big smile on my face, and they're smiling next to me. And it was during that 10-day period when I had that horrible headache because I had this headband on my head. And so there are moments of real difficulty where I feel like, oh, my God, when is this headache going to end? But at the same time, I still try to push through and smile and, you know, make, you know, because I don't want, you know, when I have, you know, difficulty and strife, it shouldn't, I don't want to infect others with it. I mean, sure, they'll know I'm going through this, but when someone walks into the room, they shouldn't feel like, oh my God, you know, this is a horrible situation. So wow. Yeah, I have this horrible headache, but you know, I'm smiling. Let's talk about the day. What's going on?
Wow. Yeah, it's, and you, just everything about what you're doing, and it makes me think so much now about, are you able, before I get closer to the wrap up, are you able to let people know about your project that you're working on now?
Yeah, I think I can talk about it. So this next script I'm working on, it's really special to me. It's really connected to me. And I'm co-writing it actually with a student of mine who's become a friend. She's really, really talented young lady. And I came up with a story and I pitched it to her and then we started writing it together. And, you know, I won't go into too much detail, but it's based on my childhood. And it's a family story. It's a story about a young boy, 12 years old, in middle school, who has a physical disability, who is struggling with his disability and being bullied and alienated and going through everything I went through. And then he has something happens to him, and all of a sudden he starts to improve all the way to the point where he has superpowers.
I love it.
And it is a superhero story told through the world of middle school. So we have the,
awesome.
You know, the crush, we have the gym teacher, we have the dad and everything that happens. And it's, you know, it's got, you know, moments of real like grittiness showing what this boy had to go through in life. But it also has such great moments of comedy. Like that, you know, I was writing some scenes just the other day and I was literally laughing out loud when I wrote it. So, and it's a family film. You know, it talks about inclusion and getting over being bullying and finding common ground and being, you know, steadfast and being true to yourself. And I think it could be, it has a lot of potential to, you know, especially in this time and age, what we're going through in society right now with all this division and supposedly anger and everything, I think this could be a very encouraging and empowering film for families and for kids especially, because, I mean, kids are seeing all this stuff on the news and, you know, where do they get, you know, positive messages? And I think this could be a great positive message. So right now we're finishing up the script. And, you know, we need to start getting it out there, trying to get a producer attached and get a maybe agent attached to it and, you know, see how far we could get it going. But, yeah, I'm very happy and excited to get this script out there. And I think it could really do a lot of good.
Oh, I can't wait. We'll have you on when it hits number one across the world, because I have no doubt. And I in any way would love for Dreamshine to ever be involved in that, because if you guys ever,
yeah,
I'm
going through your book and speaking to you, I think Dreamshine is such a special and innovative enterprise that you've started, and I think it's very important. I think there should be a Dreamshine, you know, in every state across the country, and I do believe that people with, whether it's mental or physical disabilities, are many times pushed to a side or not taken as seriously and possibly kind of looked at, oh, they're fragile, they have to be taken care of. But in fact, you know, many times they have a special gift.
That's right.
A new perspective on life that the rest of us don't have. And I think that's an asset that we should really take and applaud you know, not cloister them away, but give them the opportunity to shine.
That's right. Not just put away in some institution. And
exactly.
That's what we're always about, is innovating and even doing a Dreamshine podcast and always thinking of cool things to do. So a movie just totally aligns with it all. And I love, no matter what, I love the concept of that story. I love it, how you're sharing
awesome.
Your struggles. And I envision that superhero and also blending in the humor. And and before we go, I want to make sure we let everyone know where they can find you. And, you know, Raj, you and I have talked like on the phone behind the scenes more and more too. And you said you're wanting to share your story even more beyond movies and be doing speaking and stuff. And in a way, you're already sharing it through your creativity, through your art. But anyone listening right now, like, make sure you connect with Raj, and your full story is very, very powerful. I mean, you definitely should continue to be doing the movies, doing what you love, but also being paid to speak and motivate and inspire people across the world, because you're living
it. Thank you, Mark.
You bet.
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching for 11 years. I've directed, so I'm always in front of people. I've spoken at film festivals, and I really, really enjoy engaging with people. I mean, I love getting in front of an audience who are complete strangers, and within a few minutes, creating that bond, you know, creating that connection with these strangers, and by the end, in a way that we're friends. And I feel like if I could use what I've been through to help people, to motivate people, whether it's kids, adults, or, you know, business leaders, anyone. I mean, I just would love to share my story, engage with people, make people laugh. And so I can't wait to make this next film. I'm going to continue to write scripts. I love doing commercials. I love all that creative stuff. But I also, on a personal level, really like engaging with people.
And what, who or, and what is maybe one of the coolest experiences you've had from being in LA, maybe one of the funniest ones, but have you had a chance to meet like one of your actresses that you looked up to?
Well, you know, it's funny, not looked up to, but looked down to. And I'll tell you the funny story. I was in the DreamWorks restroom. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I was there, and corner of my eye, I see someone short, and I thought, you know, it's sometimes some of the executives have brought their kids in there, and I thought, okay. And I look over, and it's Danny DeVito.
Oh, no way.
And I could not believe it.
No way.
I love Danny DeVito, and I couldn't believe he's shorter than I am, and I'm pretty short. So that's shortness to new levels of epicness. So all of a sudden I'm getting a little nervous. Then we go up to the sink and we're washing our hands and we chatted a bit, and he was super nice. And I forgot what I said to him, but I gave him a towel and we wiped our hands together. And it was just just a few moments, but
sure.
Few moments that I will always remember. I mean, I've met all kinds of actors and, you know, because I was in LA and I was also at the studios, and people were like Mike Myers and all these people would always come into DreamWorks. But one moment with Danny DeVito was, I would say, unforgettable.
Danny DeVito, he's always one of, in Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He's incredible. That's
my dream would be to have him in one of my films. So
you will.
If he's listening. Yeah.
That's right. You will. And we'll have him on the show, share his story behind the story. I bet he has some incredible untold stories that the world needs to hear.
Definitely.
That's awesome. Raj, before I do the takeaways, please let everyone know and I'll have everyone listening. I'll post all this in the show notes, the links for you to connect to Raj, the links to The Odd Way Home, but where's like some of the best places for them to connect with you?
So I have a very brief bio and my email on rajtalks.com. That's www.rajtalks.com. And then I have a website that has a sample of my creative work, which is rajology.com, rajology.com. And my email is on both those sites. And then on Facebook, you can do a search as Rajiv Khandan, which is Khandan. So Rajeev Khandan.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Raj. Look, this has been more than an honor having you on. And I don't see this as the first time having you on the show. I'd actually like to be excited to continue to get you back on, especially as you're working more towards getting this script out there, this new blockbuster. And heck, maybe I'll have you and Dave Vesio on at the same time.
That would be great. That would be a lot of fun. Well, Mark, thank you so much. I'm loving to get to know you since we met a month or so ago, and love your book and everything you're doing with Dreamshine. And I think we will have a long, fruitful, collaborative path together. And thank you so much for having me this morning.
Absolutely, absolutely. And everyone listening to this, I mean, this whole show, Raj shared so many powerful points throughout his life. But some huge takeaways that I got is that adversity, that struggle that you're going through, a pivotal point is to transform that, like Raj did, into using creativity and imagination really as his superpower. So to discover nice. That superpower in you. And then also, as Raj was saying too, is he smiled through the adversity. He mentioned at times that we understand it's hard, like when he had the ongoing headache, and that doesn't mean there's not times where he cried through the adversity also, but he made a mental choice, a mindset choice, to say, I'm going to smile through this. I'm going to be the laughter. I'm going to actually be the light and help encourage others through the adversity, and made it bigger than him. And one of the third, and this, I love this one, as you mentioned it, is you basically burnt your security blanket. You mm-hmm. Like Raj said, everyone listening, he said, I'm not going to make a plan B, because that's setting up that I'm already saying plan A is going to fail. And he's not saying it's going to be easy. It's okay to feel afraid, but continue to go after it one day, one step at a time, and just don't give up along the way. Continue to find your passion. It's going to be a windy road. And when things and all hell breaks loose, when it gets so crazy and outrageous, the best thing to do is just laugh. Like sometimes that's all we can do is just yep. laugh. To keep our sanity. So listen, everyone, thank you. This has been an incredible show. Never settle, never give up, and keep elevating beyond.
After a long day of being pulled in every direction, the last thing anyone wants to think about is what's for dinner. That's where Schwan's can help, with a variety of real food choices, frozen to lock in freshness, from ready-made meals, premium meats and side dishes, to vegetables, ice cream, and more. Schwan's foods go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours, so you can pull off a delicious meal in no time at all. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. To help simplify mealtime, visit schwans.com. After a long day of being pulled in every direction, the last thing anyone wants to think about is, what's for dinner? That's where Schwan's can help, with a variety of real food choices, frozen to lock in freshness, from ready-made meals, premium meats and side dishes, to vegetables, ice cream, and more. Schwan's foods go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours, so you can pull off a delicious meal in no time at all. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. To help simplify mealtime, visit schwans.com.